How you doing, everybody? My name is Joe Vargas, and this is My Swift Journey Podcast, my adventures of becoming an iOS developer. How's it going, everybody? It's Joe again. Excuse me. Wow. It is 12:58, September 24th. 2020. Wow, a little earlier than before, thankfully. Thank you all for joining. Thank you all for listening. I just want to start off by saying that pretty much sorry that I'm still not, you know, really good at the organization of podcasting, but this is a learning experience for me. And I apologize for those who have, you know, listened to professional podcasters and, you know, they got it straight. I don't. And I'm just learning as I go. And I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but, you know, I guess in a way that's sort of like the developer mindset, I guess. I guess when you learn a language, you don't realize that, you know, it could be useful. The skill set of learning a language, it's not gonna, you know, segue over to learning another language. But that's the way it goes. First and foremost, I just wanted to start talking about me finally finding a hosting platform for this podcast, because I got a couple of episodes at this point in time that I could post and y'all can listen. I think the first one that I recorded was probably about 15, 20 minutes long. The second one, I don't remember. Maybe the third one. The second one was probably about 40 minutes long. This would be the third episode of this podcast. And so I was YouTubing, I was Googling, and there are a couple of platforms that I'm looking at the moment. And since it's all new to me, it's kind of like, you know, it's a struggle to find which one is appropriate. To be honest, I don't even know the two platforms' names at the moment. I probably have to look at my notes, and that works out, I guess. I don't want to name them and not be affiliated with them, or not be, you know, responsible for being not affiliated with them. To be honest, I will say, the one that looks promising, but I'm not, you know, gung-ho. I'm not, really officially with yet, is Anchor. Just because of how simple it looks, on their mobile application, you know, the application looks really, really fluid in iOS and on iPhone and iPad, I'm still, you know, looking. I'm still trying to figure out which one at the moment that I want to go with. I just want it to be as simple as possible, because again, I'm not huge on podcasting at the moment, but I just want to put the content out there for y'all to listen. And I don't mind. It looks like Anchor allows you to record on the application itself, and to mix it up with music and sound effects. But I don't mind mixing it up or doing it all on my own, locally on my laptop. I did subscribe to Adobe's suite, and it comes with Audition, which I'm recording on right now. It is a learning curve, a hell of a learning curve. But I don't mind. It's almost like Anchor doesn't want you to be the I guess the one that it doesn't want you to be a power user, I guess. But I don't mind being a power user. I'm pretty comfortable with tweaking things here and there and learning how to edit and clean up, or I guess as the professionals put it, as post processing. But yeah, Anchor almost is looking like the clear cut winner, but again, I'm not entirely sure. Moving on from me looking for a platform, I want to discuss why there hasn't been any Swift related topics. Well, the last time I recorded an episode was on Monday the 14th, I believe. I was still on my primary, you know, employer's time, you could say. I wasn't officially on my own time and able to have enough free time to either code or, you know, to podcast some more. But at the time, I was still on what they call on hitch. But I was nearing the end of it. And the episodes that I recorded, the first two, episode one and two, I was on hitch. And I remember recording those, and I was pretty emotional about those because they pretty much outlined of what I had gone through, the experiences I went through, that pretty much solidifies my actual just wanting to get out of that industry. But since I want to say though that since that episode two, I've pretty much been on free time. Again, it is Friday, September 25th. So I've pretty much been on my own free time for a week and a half now. And why it's taking me this long to record an episode? Well, it's because that Friday, September the 18th, was my birthday. Hold your applause. And my sister was in town. And her and I were just spending time together because her birthday was a week before that. So she came in town, and we were just celebrating together, you know, spending time with family. She lives far away from me, and she made the effort and driving in and spending 2 days with me, and just being together and just spending time with each other and just, you know, making memories. I pretty much, you know, put time. I just wanted to focus on her time being here and the time that I had towards dedicating to coding and to, you know, now doing this podcasting. I wanted to postpone it, but that's probably why I haven't been talking about the first two episodes. I did not talk about any Swift related topics. It's because, you know, usually when I'm on shift on that day job of mine, I usually do not focus on anything else but that. And the reason why is because I feel as though if I bleed my time of learning and coding into the time of, you know, my actual daytime work, I don't want it to conflict, and I don't want it to like frustrate me, because that's one of the things I find that I've tried to, I guess, figure out. It seems like whenever I try to you know, work on my side projects and code, I feel as though I get more frustrated knowing that I'm still unhitched on my, and like, it feels as though I don't retain, I don't move forward because my time is on my current employer's dime. And it sucks because even on the 2 minutes, 3 minutes of downtime that I have, I wish I could dedicate that time to my current side projects, to my current learning and expanding of my skill set. It sucks because I can't, because my mind is so drained dealing with my employer's obligations, to put it nicely. I just can't. Like, I just cannot. I cannot, you know, finish my day. I cannot finish my 12 hours of what my employer pays me. And I cannot stick around for maybe another hour, hour and a half, dedicating some time into my side projects, or even to this podcast now. I can't because my mind is so drained. Just to put in, you know, just an example, just like what I told you in episode 2, where that lady who just pretty much cussed me out. Like, I just, once that happens, like, everything else is just like, I just can't deal with. And like, I cannot put my effort into expanding my skill set, especially after somebody pretty much cusses you out. And I pretty much shut down after that. I have no energy, and I respect the fact that even if I have the ambition, the wanting of working on my projects, I can't because it's already been diluted so bad from the people I deal with to the point where, like, I just want to just shut down and move on to the next day. And this is why those episodes, I did not discuss anything Swift related or coding related, because I was still on my company's time and dime. But I'm happy to say that right now it's bittersweet because I'm not on their dime, but I will be in the next 4 to 5 days, give or take. And it'll be my turn to work the night shift, which means that I'm going to have to get myself used to sleeping during the day and working at night. So that's a whole different animal. And shout out to those listening that have been there before, that had or currently have a job where they are expected to work at night and sleep during the day, because it is a shitty transition. Having to adjust your body to that circumstance. And if, in case it hasn't been apparent, but it's another reason why I so much would love to be employed and becoming a developer, an iOS developer for a company who expects their employees to work during the day, because I would no longer have to be required to adjust my sleeping schedule every month back and forth to sleep at night, sleep at night 1 month and to sleep during the day the next month. And I just pretty much, you know, I chose iOS development simply because I'm not a fan anymore of sleeping during the day and awake at night, or having to adjust to that schedule. But again, I digress. And the reason why I have not been talking about any Swift related topics the last two episodes is because I was on my company's time, and I was not working on my projects. But ever since I got off that hitch, I started working on this on the side project of mine. I've been living in Houston for about, gosh, it's 2020 now. I moved here in 06, so we're going on 14 years now. And if Houston loves anything, it's their crawfish. And I love crawfish, and I look forward to the season of there are a few seasons that I look forward to throughout the year, and that's baseball season, football season, and crawfish season. Those are my top three seasons living here in Houston. And the majority of the city love crawfish. And usually the crawfish season here starts around, earliest possible January, but for sure February. And it runs all the way to at least June. And I kind of got the idea back in April that it would be pretty neat if I were just to develop an app that, based on your GPS coordinates, I could find the venues, vendors around town, or the vendors around your GPS coordinates, that would find vendors who sell crawfish. And I feel as though 5 miles is the closest distance. 5 miles, and then from there expanded to maybe 10 miles. And I started working on this application, and I started off very simply, like, look, if first of all, which database, what or whose database has that type of information? I needed a platform that has a listing of venues who sell crawfish, and I needed a venue that can hold the value of a distance away from the current GPS coordinate of venues that have or that sell crawfish. And from as long as I've known, Yelp has always had a very consistent database of restaurants, of ratings, and I know going into a few restaurants around town, I see that sticker, that Yelp sticker on the front door that says find us on Yelp. And sure enough, you find them on Yelp, you see their menu, you see their reviews, their rating, what else? Pictures, and even URLs to like very important information. So I looked up Yelp, but I just did not look up Yelp directly. I've known of a service called Rapid API. And you can find them on rapidapi.com. And just for the record, they're not affiliated with this podcast. But if you look up rapidapi.com, they pretty much have a listing, or you can find APIs just by searching in their search engine. So I went on there and I looked up Yelp. And I found one pretty that was promising. And apparently, if I wanted to have a lot of, I want to say maybe about, oh boy, maybe 1,000 API callings. And again, I'm just developing. I'm just barely at the cusp of, you know, developing this app from the ground up, and 1,000 API calls just for testing was sufficient enough, because as I was building the API request, I knew I was going to be calling so many times, to the point where I'm not even going to keep up with how many times I call. But I just wanted a nice little cushion to allow me to call so many times and not worry about meeting the quota. So I chose, I found in Rapid API a Yelp service request that somebody had put together. Well, I paid my $30. And this was in, we're in September. This is early August. And I paid my $30 just to use this API. And I got my own key and everything. And I was just building and I was calling. And one day, a week after I purchased the API and the service, all of a sudden I got an error on my code, the print statement that I had applied, saying everything was coming back nil, that it could not, like the API could not be reached. And I checked my, I made sure I was connected to the internet. And I even tried using Postman. It's a different client. If you're not familiar, it's a client that allows you to register API URLs and parameters and allow you to get API requests and pretty much a result back into values. So I used that, and that failed too. Like, what's going on here? So it turns out that the I guess whoever put that API, that Yelp API, pretty much canceled the service, like his profile or something. And my access to Yelp was pretty much non-existent. Again, I had just paid $30 prior, the week prior. So I'm emailed the Rapid API customer service. I explained to them what happened, and thankfully they did not give me any trouble, and they allowed me, they even refunded my money back. And so I had pretty much already had my API request structured in my code, and the data model object already set up. And I was like, okay, now what am I going to do? Like, pretty much, I still wanted to use Yelp for this project. So I pretty much went through Yelp themselves, which I should have just done in the first place, because I would not have been in that predicament. So once I had registered with Yelp directly, I got the URL, I got the business search URL, and I got my API key. And so I got that, I want to say, let me just open up calendar here. We're the 25th. I want to say I got that on, I got that sorted out maybe on the 2nd of September. And the 2nd of September is when I started my work hitch. And I worked my 14 days straight. And on the 16th, it was my first free day off. And at that moment, I was like, you know, pretty excited because it's my first day off. And I just wanted from now until the 18th, when my sister was driving up to meet me, I just wanted to work on refactoring my code to match the new Yelp API and make sure that every property on that API was, you know, sufficient enough to continue working on my app. And thankfully, even though the previous API through Rapid API had a little bit more properties to use and query, the one that you register through Yelp directly, it's pretty good. I'm pretty satisfied with it. So I pretty much spent that Wednesday, the 16th and the 17th and some of the 18th, figuring out to refactor the structure, because the response, the data response, had a different structure compared to the Rapid API one. But that's fine, because I knew it wasn't going to be that bad. And it took me a while to refactor it, but I got it done. The only thing is that with the API, it does not the difference between the response from the one I got from Rapid API to the one I got to the one from Yelp directly is that it did not have, and stick with me, it did not have the sublocality value with it. Now, let me rephrase. The Yelp request data structure response from Rapid API had a sublocality value. The API request from Yelp themselves directly did not have a sublocality. So what does this mean? Well, first of all, I really wanted the sublocality. Why? Well, just to put it in perspective, what is sublocality? For those of you who don't know or have not played with the geolocation in iOS and Swift, sublocality is the part of town of a city. So let's say, you know, just to put in everybody's, you know, those of you, I mean, unless you've been living under a rock, everyone knows New York City. I'm gonna use New York City as an example. New York City. That's a city. The Yelp request responds back, has a value for city name as New York City. The sublocality would be like places like Manhattan, Brooklyn, you know, names like that. Manhattan, Brooklyn. That's the parts of the city. So that's what I was aiming for when it came down to sublocality. I really want in my app to have the name of the sublocality, because it gives the user an idea of where that particular restaurant is located. If the restaurant says, the location of downtown, the user here will know, okay, well, I have an idea where downtown is, you know, at. That's where this restaurant is at, you know. And that's why it was pretty much important for me to have that sublocality of the restaurant. Well, unfortunately, with the API, Yelp API that I was using, it does not have sublocality. So what does this mean? Well, the API request has the key value pairs for latitude and longitude. And to me, perfect. That's pretty much all I need to find the sublocality of this particular restaurant. So that means I would need to just simply write a function that takes two inputs of latitude and longitude and return a string of the sublocality, because the sublocality property of a placemark using core location, the sublocality is a string. It returns a string. And so I knew if, so long as I had the latitude and longitude, it can return a string. So I pretty much put together a function that returns said sublocality. And was it easy? No, because I thought simply you can write a function to do those things and return the sublocality, but assign this sublocality to a property within the rest of the properties that I'm already querying the data within the API request. And it pretty much not so simple. I had to refactor this function into one that has a closure. And I'm pretty iffy with closures. Usually when I work closures, I run into a brick wall. And let me tell you, working on this function with a closure that returned the sublocality, I want to say it took me 3 days of tinkering around and reading through Stack Overflow articles and even like blogs that people wrote about how to get sublocality. It took me about 3 days just to retrieve the sublocality value. And not only that, but the code that I had written to declare the properties for the other values I wanted to query from the API. And as an example, that would be the name of the restaurant, the street address, the phone number, the URL of the restaurant or the profile URL. All that needed to be structured into the closure of the one function that was returning the sublocality. And I learned the hard way. That was pretty much the hard way of learning what asynchronous really means. Because apparently anything outside the function, anything outside the closure will run independently from the closure. So if I want that closure to count and I want that closure to return the sublocality, I needed to assign the sublocality to a property. But that property needed to be within the closure. Not only that, the other properties declared needed to be within that that closure. So it's pretty much I had to refactor the code not once, not twice, and as of now, I don't even think 3-4 times. I probably had to do it 5 times, simply because of the way it works with being asynchronous. And to be honest, that made me humble to the point where I just need to refresh my memory on that asynchronous portion, because I was dumbfounded on how I had to refactor my code that dramatic in fashion to be able to work, simply because I wanted that sublocality value was so important to me. It's just this nice feature that I want in my app, because I really want to tell users, hey, you want to this venue here, it's in this part of town, and that means a lot. And as a an adoptive Houstonian, it's always great to tell a person or to let a person know where this particular restaurant is at, simply by letting them know what part of town it's located in. So now, full disclosure, yes, I used Stack Overflow. I Googled the hell out of finding out how I can retrieve and save this sublocality value to a property within my code. And that brings me to the conclusion of this episode, and that is that it's okay to ask for help. When I started learning the code, I had no one to go to. I had no friends or family who were into coding, and so I couldn't, you know, ask anybody that I knew any questions about it. So I was pretty much lone wolfing it and learning. And when I first started, I bought a course on Udemy, and then I watched tutorials on YouTube, and then also read through some blogs about Swift and how to do different things with Swift. And every time I had a question about it or how to implement, you know, a certain feature, best I can do is just ask. I can leave a comment in the YouTube video that I watched, or leave a comment in the blog post that I read. And even in Udemy, it has a really good thread of asking people and other students who are taking the same course for help, or if they ran into trouble or anything like that. But when you're going on your own and creating your own app, Now you're going to find it even more challenging because now you're building a project, a personal project that no YouTuber showed how to make, or a blogger did not write on how to make. And there's no course on it, so you can't ask anybody in the thread for help. So now you're pretty much stuck. It's almost like you're stuck now. It's on your own. And even after you exhausted all your resources of combing through Stack Overflow posts, combing through all those YouTube videos and all those blog posts, now what? Now you want to, you're in the need of asking a more experienced developer, right? So now what? And where do you go? Who do you ask, or where do you even go to ask? And that brings me to the platforms of Slack and Discord. Slack and Discord have many channel, many servers of software development of all kinds. I only use pretty much the ones related to Swift. But there's so many out there, and there's so many people willing to, you know, answer your question or even give you guidance. There is one particular Slack server I'm in that has about, I think, 23,000 users in there. Now, not all of them might be active, but that's, you know, 23,000 possible users who are willing to help you out and answer any questions that you might have. Now, you just don't want to throw like hundreds of lines of code into a Slack or Discord post. You want to make sure you understand your code first so you can explain it to those in the chat. You want to explain what you want or expect your code to do and what it's doing instead. Then provide a snippet of your code. Again, not all your code. Let the users know that if they prefer to see the code in its entirety, let them know that you can do that. But the bottom line is you want to give them that choice of asking for the entire code and not just flood them initially with all of it. Also, it helps that you reference posts to Stack Overflow or blogs you read or YouTube videos that you watched, because it lets users know in the chat that you did your research before you asked in the chat. Even links to the Swift language documentation is great enough, because again, it shows them that you are aware of the documentation, but maybe it didn't explain specifically what you're trying to accomplish. But in summary, again, it's okay to ask for help, but you want to make sure that you do your due diligence and combing through the internet, combing through YouTube videos and blogs to find your solution. And then, you know, when you've pretty much exhausted all that and you couldn't find the solution, you know, then, you know, pretty much type up your, you know, I guess a thesis of, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with your code and what you're getting instead. Now, the thing is about when you do your due diligence is that sometimes if you're lucky, you'll come across a post or, you know, an article or a video that may not be 100% and solve your issue that you've encountered, but it kind of like paves a path to a solution or, you know, an implementation of your code, maybe rewriting it or implementing another library or something that will, you know, get you to the what you expect your code to do. And that's while it's rather rare, it does happen. Now, going back to my issue of trying to get the sublocality, I went on to a Slack server and pretty much, you know, laid out what I was expecting, what I was getting instead, and snippets of my code. And thankfully, a gentleman, I have a Slack pulled up here, by Andrew. His name was Andrew Koprowski. Andrew Koprowski. Cool guy. He helped me out. I pretty much gave him a snippet of my code. And he kind of implied that he wanted to see more additional lines of my code, and so he can get a better understanding of what I was trying to accomplish. And thankfully, he pretty much he solved my problem by letting me know that, hey, in order to use the return value of sublocality, I have to pretty much incorporate all the values I'm getting back from the API request and put it inside the closure that is returning the sublocality value. And the reason why, because the request is asynchronous with every other method that's running around it. And once I applied his solution, I put all the return, I put all the properties inside that closure, and I was able to get the sublocality and assign it to a property inside the closure. Additionally, what I was more worried about was that was I going to be able to access the other return values from the API request to the object model that I'll be using to apply or to use in my app. And he gave me a very confident yes. So I applied his idea, and sure enough, I was able to not only use sublocality value, but also, you know, have access to the return values of my API request, which I couldn't be more relieved about. All right, everybody, that pretty much wraps up this episode. I do appreciate all those who have stuck around and listened to it in its entirety, and those who have subscribed and listened to the previous episodes. I know this is probably not the best sounding podcast, but again, I'm not an expert in the whole audio editing and making it sound nice and clear and neat. It's something that I am learning, and I'm working with every day. I'm just messing around with Adobe Audition at the moment and try and make it sound nice and pretty. As for the next episode, which would be episode 4, I'm not quite sure when I'll be able to record that one, but hopefully soon. I do have a couple of topics that I want to discuss. One of them is for you, the job seeker, those who are patiently waiting to get that role in the company as a software developer. And the other topic is for the interviewers, the hiring managers, or the recruiters who are looking for that quote unquote perfect candidate. I found a post on LinkedIn who pretty much drops a truth bomb on such ideology of that quote unquote perfect candidate. All right, everybody, until next time, this is Joe Vargas. Hang in there, stay strong, and code on.